Thank you all for allowing me to speak this morning.
And for those of you who knew that I was speaking and you still showed up, I doubly thank you. But I hope that it'll be worthwhile to all of us this morning for the things that we'll study, and that it might be profitable that we could all serve God a little better in our lives. We often use words to describe people, events, things in our lives. And then we can take a list of words, and from those lists we can describe furthermore. And so I have two lists of words here this morning: courage, humility, faith, love of God, repentance, spirit. And the other list: selfish ambition, deceitfulness, denial, immorality, and murder. And if you look at these lists, and I said these lists describe a person or two people, you might say to one that one of those person's attributes are desirable, while the other we might look at and say is despicable. We might look at one of these people here and we say that he would be a righteous person and the other ungodly. We might want to be a friend of one and completely avoid the other. And yet these columns of words here should serve as an example to us. One is an example of what we should be, and one is an example of what we strive not to be. And the other interesting aspect of these words is that they describe a person, and the person that they describe is the same person. These here are words that describe David. And David was described by God as a man after God's own heart. And so this morning I want to look at David. I want to look at some situations in his life. And David had a unique quality that in times of adversity is when he prevailed the most. We're going to look at these times of adversity in David's life, at least two examples of them anyhow. And we'll look at his faith and the things that allowed him to come through these times, and how he succeeded in pleasing God in spite of the time when he did fall. And then we'll try to make those applications for ourselves as well. The first situation that probably is most notable to most of us, and is from the time that we were little children, was when David met Goliath. And we've been taught about that our whole lives. And we think about the fact that this young man, this boy, went out to meet this giant. But I don't know that we consider the things that made David so great at that time in his life. But we'll start with a little history. At the time that that Goliath walked on the earth, Saul was king of Israel. And Saul had fallen out of favor with God. In 1 Samuel, the 13th chapter, in 1 Samuel 13, Saul at this time is fighting the Philistines. And the children of Israel are not quite as confident as they ought to be. And the Philistines are assembling an army at Michmash. And Samuel is supposed to show up and offer a sacrifice. But Samuel hasn't shown up at the appointed time, and so Saul takes it upon himself to offer this sacrifice to God. And about the time he gets done offering this sacrifice, in verse 11 of 1 Samuel 13, it says that Samuel arrives, and it says, "But Samuel said, 'What have you done?' And Saul said, 'Because I saw that the people were scattering from me, and that you did not come within the appointed days, and that the Philistines were assembling at Michmash, therefore I said, now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not asked for the favor of the Lord, so I forced myself and offered the burnt offering.' And Samuel said to Saul, 'You have acted foolishly. You have not kept your commandment, kept the commandment of your God, which he commanded you, for now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever.'" And verse 14 is especially important here. He says, "But now your kingdom shall not endure. The Lord has sought out for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has appointed him as ruler over his people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." You see, Saul assumed a role right here. He assumed the role of a priest, and he took on those responsibilities. And equally important with what Saul did wrong here was Saul didn't show any remorse for that. He made excuse for that. And not once did Saul say he was sorry for the things that he had done. That wasn't the heart that God was looking for in a man, but he had somebody planned to be the ruler of Israel. And he said, I'm looking for a man after my own heart. In Acts the 13th chapter in verse 22, the writer there describes David, and he says in Acts 13:22, and after he had removed Saul, he raised up David to be their king, concerning whom he also testified and said, I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my heart, who will do all my will. And that's important right there at the very end of that. A man who will do all my will. A man after mine own heart. And so here's the setting for why David is being chosen as a king over Israel. Because of the fact that Saul isn't following the guidelines that God's established. He's not just following the role that God had for him. He's gone on and he's continued to sin after this point. But at this point here, he's taken on a priestly role, which was displeasing to God. And the other interesting fact here is that the person that God has chosen, the person that God describes as after his own heart at this time, is a young man, a boy perhaps. Most scholars say between the ages of probably 12 and 16. And this young man has already dedicated his life to serving God. And we can learn that, not because of the way he's described in these verses, but because of his actions later on. But in 1 Samuel, the 16th chapter, God has told Samuel, he says, now you go to the house of Jesse, and he said, in this house you're going to find the person that I've anointed. And it's interesting because when he goes there, the first son that he sees of Jesse is Eliab. And he says, Samuel says to himself, he says, surely this is God's anointed. And God answers to Samuel in 1 Samuel 16, chapter verse 7. He says, but the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. He says, God sees not as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearances, but the Lord looks at the heart. It's kind of what the people of Israel did with Saul too, wasn't it? They looked at the outward appearance. And so Samuel goes through all these children of Jesse, and God says, that's not the one, that's not the one. He went through seven sons, and that wasn't the one. And Samuel asked Jesse, he said, do you have another? And he said, he's out tending sheep. And David came in, and it said in verse 12, so he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy with beautiful eyes and a handsome appearance. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. And so at this time, Samuel learns that this young man is who God has appointed to be the next king of Israel. And it's because this man was a man after God's own heart. We can furthermore see the focus in David's life as we go on now. It says the three oldest sons of Jesse were enlisted in the army of Saul to fight the Philistines. And there's a giant that's coming out every day. And he stands on this mountain and he hollers down to Israel. He says, in verse 10, he says, this is Goliath, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. And so on a daily basis, he comes out and he says this to the children of Israel. And nobody's going out to fight him. And they're afraid. And Jesse sends his son out to the battle lines to deliver his brother some food, the commanders of the army some cuts of cheese. And while he's there, Goliath comes out and he makes the same statement again. And David says in verse 26 of 1 Samuel 17, he says, then David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? The thing that impresses me here is that this young man understands that Israel was the anointed nation of God. He understands that God was with Israel. And here's this whole army. Here's a king. And all of them have missed this point that this young man is getting. Who is this person that can stand and defy God? And it says in verse 27, the people answered him in accord with this word, saying, thus it will be done for the man who kills him. And Eliab, his oldest brother. Now remember, this is the one that Samuel
when he saw him, he said, "Surely this is God's anointed." Eliam, his oldest brother, when he heard how David spoke to the men, Eliab's anger burned against David, and he said, "Why have you come down, and with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle." So Eliab accuses David of just coming down there to watch the battle that's going to wage. And David responds as a young man. He says, "Was it not just a question?" He says, "What have I done? Was it not just a question?" And he turns back to the men of Israel and he repeats the same thing again. Word of this makes its way to Saul. And Saul calls David before him. And David, this young man, this boy, he says to Saul in verse 32, "Let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." And it's interesting because Saul didn't even have confidence in David at this point. It seems that his brother didn't have confidence in him. The king of Israel didn't have confidence in him. And Saul even tries to dissuade him because he said to David in verse 33, "You are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he's been a warrior from his youth." And this is where we really get into the crux of how we know that David sought after God his whole life. Right here, starting in verse 34, "But David said to Saul, 'Your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by the beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God.' And David said, 'The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine.' And Saul said to David, 'Go and may the Lord be with you.'" That's powerful right there, isn't it? This young man stands and he said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the bear is going to deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And this Philistine was about 9 feet tall. 6 cubits, I think they say. So he's a little over 9 feet tall. And this ceiling above me right here is probably about 12 feet tall. So this guy, he's towering over everybody at that time. And this young boy is going to go out and fight him. He's not worried. His whole focus is, "God is going to deliver me. This is the army of the living God. And you all are in fear." David took his experiences from when he was a young man. He took the experiences when the lion came out against him and when the bear came out against him. And he took those same experiences and he says, "I'll fight this giant the same way that I fought the lion and the bear." But David did something else here. While the rest of Israel is trembling, and while the rest of Israel is standing by the side wondering who's going to take up the battle and go out and meet this giant, David says, "I'll go out and meet my enemy." And he went out and he met the enemy when it was the bear, and he went out and met the enemy when it was the lion. David understood that he had a responsibility to go out and meet his foe. And he applied those same experiences in this situation here because he knew that somebody had to go out and meet the enemy. That you can't, as a Christian, we can't, as a Christian, just wait for the enemy to come to us and expect to win the battle. We all have lions and bears in our life, and we have to take up the battle against them. We have to go out and we have to meet the enemy. And we go on and we learn that in 1 Samuel 17, chapter verse 45, after David has told Saul he's going to go out, it says, "David said to the Philistine," and David had stopped, by the way, and picked up 5 smooth stones, and he had a sling. And he says to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you."
he felt more equipped to go into battle that day than anybody else. And as the giant, it said the giant scoffed at him. And that didn't bother David at all. In verse 48, and it happened when the Philistine rose up and came and drew near to meet David. Now look what David did. That David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. That was a man after God's own heart. He had complete confidence, complete faith in God, that God was going to deliver him. He knew that God had been with him. He had been serving God all of his life. He understood that God was with those who looked after, or God looked after his own, that God was with those who served God. He applied those experiences he had learned throughout his life. It's because David had been serving God that he was able to face this situation today. And the thing about David is, because he was serving God, because of the relationship that he had with God, because he was continually looking to God for guidance, for wisdom, for instruction, that he was able to defeat Goliath. Because of this, Saul saw in him someone who was able to lead. In the 18th chapter, verse 5, it says, "So David went out wherever Saul sent him and prospered, and Saul set him over the men of war, and it was pleasing in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants." So here he is, a young man, and Saul puts him over all the armies, or over the armies of the men. And later on in that same chapter, in verse 30, it says, "Then the commander of the Philistines went out to battle, and it happened as often as they went out that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so his name was highly esteemed." So here he is, the youngest. He gets set over, basically, I guess, like a general over the armies. And he said, he behaved himself more wisely than all the rest. And you know a lot of us that are younger, and that includes most of y'all, but a lot of us that are younger, we have our goals in our life, and a lot of times our goals in our life don't include God. And we say, I'll make time for God later on in life, but today I want to do this or that. And David, from the time he was young, he was serving God. And so we can't really use the fact that we're young as an excuse today to not serve God. And if we're young and we're not serving Him, what is our excuse? Because we have an example here of a man who from his childhood was serving God and following the commandments He had given to him. But unfortunately, we can't look at David's life and say that this man led a perfect life and that he didn't ever follow his own lust. I think the important fact is when we look at when David did stumble later on in his life, it's because of the fact that he had been serving God all of his life that he fell back on those things that he knew. He fell back on his faith and his confidence in God. And so the second time in David's life that I'll look at that is a time of adversity where David turned back to God is a time when he lusted after another woman, when he lusted after Bathsheba. In 2 Samuel, the 11th chapter, the children of Israel are in a battle with the Ammonites. And it says in the first verse of chapter 11, "Now it happened in the spring at the time when kings go out to battle that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the sons of Ammon and besieged Rabbah, but David stayed at Jerusalem." When we first look at this, there may be a key into some of the things that had happened at David's life at this point. It says, now when the time of spring when kings went out to battle, David didn't go with them. And we go on and it says, "Now when evening came, David arose from his bed and walked around on the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful in appearance." And maybe this is the second thing that we see, is that maybe David had kind of grown lazy in his job. It says it's evening time and he's rising from bed. And so he should have been out there at battle. And he should have been out doing the things that kings did at that time of year. And instead, David has stayed at home while the battle goes on. So he's got a lot of time on his hands, a lot of idle time. And he walks around and he sees this woman bathing. And lust is what enters in. So in verse 3, David sent and inquired about the woman. And one said, "Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittites?" And David's given a warning here. David's self-willed at this point because he knows now that this woman is another man's wife. And yet he still chooses, as we see in verse 4, to call her and bring her to him. And it says, David sent messengers and took her, and when she came to him, he lay with her, and when she had purified herself from uncleanness, she returned to her house. And shortly thereafter, verse 5, David learns that Bathsheba is pregnant. Here's a man who has become self-willed. He's forgotten that he's to follow God. He's forgotten the things that he should have done to lead the children of Israel. And we're going to look at the verses next. And what we see is a man that goes into a state of denial. He doesn't even recognize that what he's done is wrong. So he purposes in his heart a plan to cover up his wrong. He wants to deny that what he's done is wrong. It says in verse 6, David sent Joab saying, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." So Joab sent Uriah to David. And when Uriah comes, David thinks that Uriah, after he inquires about the battle, he thinks that Uriah is going to go home and lay with his wife. But instead, Uriah is a noble man. He's a man that's dedicated to the army. He's dedicated to that job that he has. And it says that Uriah slept on the doorstep of the king's house. And so David inquired, and Uriah said to him, he says, "Is it right for me to go to my house and to lie with my wife and to drink and eat when Joab and the other men are out living in tents and fighting this battle?" He said, "I won't do it." And so David even goes farther in his denial of sin. He says, "Okay, I got a plan. I'll get Uriah drunk. Then he'll go and lay with his wife." So he does. But you know, Uriah is noble in his character. He still doesn't go to his own house. So David goes another step farther. He says, "Well, if he's not going to do what I want, I'll just kill him." So he writes a letter. He gives the letter to Uriah. He says, "Uriah, you take this letter to Joab." And so Uriah delivers his own death warrant in his hand to Joab. And this letter tells Joab, he says, "You put Uriah at the front of the hottest battle. And in the heat of that battle, you withdraw yourself so that he might be killed." You know, a lot of times today, when we have sin in our own life, to what lengths do we go to cover that sin? I don't think most of us go to the lengths that David went to here, but how low do we sink in an effort to deny the fact that we've been ungodly and we haven't served God? Do we often cause others to be caught up in our sin? Do we bring problems into other people's life because we can't be responsible for the things that we do? I think too many times we do the same thing that David did here. And the thing that David learned shortly thereafter, and the thing that we need to learn, is that we can't expect God to be with us in sin. If we're going to live a life where we're sinning and we're denying and we're not repenting, and we're not doing those things that God has told us to do, we can't expect to receive the blessings of God. We can't expect God to reward us, and we can't expect to fool God. It becomes apparent to everybody that reads this at the time that David has sinned, and probably to most of the people that saw this. I'm sure Joab had some large questions in his mind. What's David doing? This is one of my best warriors. But David's sin will find himself out soon. In 2 Samuel 11:27, it said, "When the time of mourning was over," this is after Uriah had been killed, and Bathsheba is in mourning. It says, "Now when the time of mourning was over, David sent and brought her to his house, and she became his wife. Then she bore him a son. But the thing that David had done was evil in the sight of the Lord." And so we know for certain that David's plan here, David's lust, David's murder, didn't escape the eyes of God. And God wasn't happy with what had just happened. And so God sends the prophet Nathan to go see David. And I think it's interesting that when Nathan goes to see David here, he didn't just come up and he said, "Hey, David, you sinned. You did wrong. You know, what were you thinking?" Nathan understood that David was in a state of denial. He understood that David was not acting accountable for the things that he had done. So Nathan comes up with this parable, I guess you could say, that he presents to David. He says, "There were two men in one city," and this is in chapter 12 of 2 Samuel. "There were two men in one city, the one rich and the other poor. The rich man had a great many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb, which he had bought and nourished, and it grew up together with him and his children. It would eat of his bread and drink of his cup and lie in his bosom, and it was like a daughter to him." See, Nathan is going to really pour it on heavy here. He wants David to visualize in his mind the relationship that this man had. And he didn't have much in his life, but he had an incredible relationship with his pet. And it says, "Now a traveler came to the rich man, and he was unwilling to take from his own flock or his own herd to prepare for the wayfarer who had come to him. Rather, he took the poor man's ewe lamb and prepared it for the man who had come to him." And David now convicts himself. He says, "Then David's anger burned greatly against the man, and he said to Nathan, 'As the Lord lives, surely the man who has done this deserves to die.'" See, Nathan presents the scenario to David, to this man who's in denial, and he lets him convict himself. And then Nathan looks at him and he says, "David, you are the man." How many of us today, if we're in sin and we're in a state of denial and somebody comes to us to try to help us and they say, "You are the man," how many of us accept it? How many of us are sorry for what we've done? How many of us get angry at that person and try to turn it on somebody else for trying to help us? This is where I say David, once again, he turned back again to God. He remembered slaying the lion and the bear now. He remembered the role that God had in his life, because as he goes on here, Nathan said to David that he was the man, and he says, it is I who anointed you king over Israel, and it is I who delivered you from the hand of Saul. I also gave you your master's house and your master's wives under your care, and I gave you the house of Israel and Judah. And if that had been too little, I would have added to you many more like these. Why have you despised the word of the Lord by doing evil in his sight? You have struck down Uriah the Hittite with the sword. You have taken his wife to be your wife, and you've killed him with the sword of the sons of Ammon. Now therefore, the sword shall never depart from your house, because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. And God goes on and he tells him some of the things that are going to happen. But in verse 13, David says, "I have sinned against the Lord." And here's a big contrast, because here's a king of Israel. When Samuel went to Saul, Saul never accepted responsibility for what he had done. When Nathan goes to David, David says, "I have sinned against the Lord." You see, he fell back on his days that he was growing up and that he knew who God was and he knew the role of God in his life and he knew his role. He falls back on that because David, this is what distinguishes David as being a man after God's own heart, is that he remembered God at this point. And Nathan said to David, this is verse 13, "The Lord has taken away your sin, you shall not die. However, because by this deed you have given occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the child also that is born to you shall surely die." So Nathan went to his house. And so David now is given, there's going to be a punishment for what you've done. You can't get away with these things. God's going to forgive you. God's going to take away this sin. But there's going to be a cause and effect now for the actions in your life. And the same thing holds true for us today. We can go to God. We can sin. And God will forgive us of those sins. And that's a great thing. But there's a cause and effect that happens a lot in our life. And we can't expect that all good things are going to happen because we've done bad. And David, he accepted that responsibility, and he accepted it well, I think.
God gave him the warning. It said that David went and he laid on the ground and he prayed and he wept to God that this child might be delivered. But God kept his promise and the child died.
And David stood up, changed his clothes, he ate, and he went on about his business. He went on serving God. Sin has its consequences to all men. David was no exception and we're no exception. And we need to understand that when we live a life, that we let our own lusts and our own personal indulgences lead us, we're not fooling God on what we're doing. And that there will be a responsibility that we have to bear up to. And there is going to be something, whether it's today or later on, that we have to answer to God for. And God's faithful to forgive us of our sins, but there's always a cause and there's always an effect of sin. You know, as we go on and we look at David's life, he wrote a lot of psalms. And we can see in these psalms how David felt and how David was sorry for things that he had done. And he wrote in the 51st psalm, if we read it, that one, how he kind of lamented for years over the things that he had done wrong in his life. He says, "Be gracious to me, O God, according to thy loving kindness, according to thy greatness of thy compassion. Blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions, and my sin is ever before me. Against thee, thee only, I have sinned and done what is evil in thy sight, so that thou art justified when thou dost speak and blameless when thou dost judge." See, David was never bitter. He always was thankful that God had forgiven him. He always turned to God for guidance and strength. He says in verse 22, "Now consider this, you who forget God, lest I tear you in pieces and there be none to deliver. He who offers a sacrifice of thanksgiving, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong chapter here. That was in verse 50. He says in verse 10, "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Do not cast me away from thy presence, and do not take thy Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of thy salvation, and sustain with me a willing spirit. Then I will teach transgressors thy ways, and sinners will be converted to thee." That was how David reacted to being disciplined. He continued to serve God. He became more diligent in that. I think, I'm not going to say that David was without fault from this point on in his life. We know that he did some more things that were displeasing to God, but for the most part, we can say that David served God the rest of his days. That he tried to do those things that were right, and he continually looked to God. And David understood his role, and he understood God's role. He understood that God was great. In Psalms, the 18th chapter, he says in the first three verses there, "I love thee, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised, and I'm saved from mine enemies." He recognizes the smallness of man in Psalms, the 8th chapter. He says, starting in verse 3, "When I consider," Psalms 8 verse 3, "When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou dost take thought of him?" So he understands the smallness of man. He understands the greatness of God. And David understood something else in his life. He understood that God had a plan for all men. And he understood that God's plan was complete. In Psalms 119, he says here, how about Psalms 19? Psalms 19. And there's a song that we sing, and I'm going to start in verse 7 of Psalms 19. He says, "The law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true, they are righteous altogether. They are more desirable than gold, yes, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them the servant is warned, in keeping him there is great reward. Who can discern his errors? Acquit me of my hidden faults. Also keep back thy servant from presumptuous sins. Let them not rule over me, then I shall be blameless, and I shall be acquitted of great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer." He understood that God had a plan for man. He understood that in order for man to be acceptable to God, man had to follow God's plan. And that's an important lesson for all of us to learn. David could have continued to try to devise a method whereby he could live a life that was according to his own plan. He could continue to follow his own lust. But David recognized in his life that God was great, man was small. He recognized in his life that God devised the plan and man follows the plan. And in order to be pleasing to God, we follow that plan. And David understood, and probably the most known psalm of all is the 23rd Psalm. David understood that God took care of those who follow him. And how many people turn to the 23rd Psalm to find comfort? And when we read that, this man is writing about how he found comfort in God. David's life is just full of examples of a man who sought after God. He sought after God's counsel. He prayed for wisdom. He prayed for guidance. He prayed in praise to God. He prayed for forgiveness from God. And we as Christians, who I don't think many of us could be described as people who are after God's own heart like David was, because God described David that way. I think a lot of us seek after God, but David was described by God as a man after my own heart. When we read about the things that David's done, both the good and the bad, it should serve as an example to us of how David handled times of adversity. How from the time that he was a youth, he sought after God. How that David went after his enemy, the lion and the bear. And we should ask ourselves, if I'm not willing to fight the lion and the bear in my life, what do I do when I face the giant? Because sooner or later, all of us will have these scenarios in our life where we're going to have to stand up and face those things that go against God. I think each of us need to give ourselves to the study of God's Word, especially maybe the study of Psalms and the things that David can relate to us of how he dealt with situations in his life, of how he praised God, of how he turned to God for strength and for guidance, of how he developed a relationship with God. And we need to understand that if our lives are void of God, then our lives are worthless. I'm going to close this morning in Psalms, the 32nd chapter, verses 8 through 11. David writes here, he says, "I will instruct you and teach you in the way which you should go. I will counsel you with my eye upon you. Do not be as the horse or as the mule, which have no understanding, whose trappings include the bit and bridle to hold them in check. Otherwise they will not come near to you. Many are the sorrows of the wicked, but he who trusts in the Lord, loving kindness shall surround him. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, you righteous ones, and shout for joy, all you who are upright in heart." If there's any here this morning who are not children of God, who don't have God in their life, who realize that we have battles that are going to have to be fought and that you want God to be there for you, then this morning the invitation goes out to you. to make that request known and to become a child of God as together we stand and sing.